Well, good morning. Let me add my welcome to Ben's. I'm Steve. I'm one of the leaders here, and I'll be taking us through that passage. For those of you who are new to us this morning, welcome. It's really good to see you. I hope you felt at home amongst us, and we'll get to know us afterwards. We're continuing our series in 1 Corinthians. We've been working through this for quite a few months now, looking at different sections. And we're in this section where Paul's defending his... not just defending his ministry, but defending why his ministry looks like it does when the Corinthians just dislike it. They dislike him. They don't like listening to him. They don't like his weak-looking life. And Paul's kind of unpacking why. How does the message about Jesus shape him? How is he becoming cross-cultured? That's what we're thinking about as we look at Paul, thinking through the implications for us as a community church. What does it mean for us to be shaped and cultured by the message about Jesus Christ and him crucified? So let me pray, and then we'll get into this chapter again. Let's bow our heads and pray. Father, you know that as we heard and been reflecting on these chapters the last few weeks, I guess I'm not the only one to find myself pulling away from these verses. Finding reasons to why it can't mean what it seems to mean. And so I pray, Lord, as we come again and hear how the cross is to shape us, please would you call us again to die to ourselves and take up our cross and follow the Lord Jesus. Please, Lord, work that culture into us as a community here in the Rylands. For the sake of others, so that people might hear and respond to the good news about Jesus, and ask that in his name. Amen. Well, our culture thinks, as we've been thinking over the last few weeks, that freedom is having the right to live however I please, as long as I don't cause harm to anyone else. That's kind of the dominant view in our culture. As long as I'm not harming people, then I can do and live however I like. You're free to do anything you like as long as it doesn't harm anyone else. Make whatever decision you want as long as it's not imposing on others. Now, we could weigh up the merits of that. I don't think it's actually livable if you push it in all sorts of circumstances. But I guess there is some truth to that, isn't there? There is some truth. Except what we've been seeing from 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and 9 is that Paul says, no, freedom, like everything, is to be shaped by the message about Jesus and him crucified. So gospel freedom is not doing what I want, like our culture, and not making sure I don't hurt others. Gospel freedom is choosing not to do what I am entitled to do for the sake of others. Choosing to curtail my freedoms so that others might be blessed. We saw in chapter 8 that he chooses to curtail his food preferences when it means going to the temple so that he might not lead other Christians into sin. We saw last week that he forgo his right to support in chapter 9, 1 through to 18, his right to financial support from the Corinthians so that they would understand the gospel is something that's free. It's not something they own, but it's something that owns them. And this week, in the final few verses, so verses 19 down to 27, we're going to look at particularly, we're going to see what cross-shaped freedom looks like for the sake of those who don't yet believe. And it means three things that we'll see this morning. It means living, firstly, with radical flexibility. Radical flexibility. Look down at verse 19. Though I'm free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but under the law of Christ, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak I became weak, in order to win the weak. I've become all things to all people, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do this all for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. Here we get to the climax of this chapter and Paul's principle of why his life looks like it does. And he says there, I've become all things to all people so that by all possible means I might save some. I do this all for the sake of the gospel. Radical flexibility, we'll see. What does Paul mean by all things to all people? What do you think he means by that? It's one of those phrases, isn't it? All things to all men or all things to all people that's entered our cultural mainstream. It's a familiar phrase to people in and outside the church. But I'm not sure culturally whether we think it's a good thing or a bad thing. If you describe a politician, for example, as wanting to be all things to all people, well, you start to question, is that a good politician or a bad politician? Only a politician that says whatever they know people want to hear with no real convictions of their own in order to get into power. Is that a good thing? Well, no, it's not a good thing. We don't like that kind of politician. But I think we do use it more positively, don't we? Someone who knows what they think, but doesn't insist on their way, but allows other people to be who they are. I guess that's kind of our view of tolerance in our culture. Kind of a warped view of tolerance, but a kind of everyone can do what they like. And we shouldn't stop people doing what they like. But what does Paul mean by that? When these words were first uttered in the first century, what did he mean by being all things to all people? Well, taken in the context of this letter as a whole, it's pretty clear that Paul's inflexible on certain things, isn't he? He's inflexible, for example, on the message of the gospel. In fact, we saw last week in chapter 9, 1 to 18, that he lives in a particular way that goes against the grain of the Corinthians in order that they might understand the gospel. So all things to all people doesn't mean all things to all people that I might be liked by everybody. That's not what he means, because we've seen that he does things that make him particularly unlikable to those in Corinth who are desperate to support him and own him. Or look down at sentence 21 with me. Paul says, to those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I'm not free from God's law, but I'm under Christ's law. So all things to all people is not be anything to anyone and do what I like, nor is it to ditch my convictions and just move with the times. To swim with the tide. Now, as one person has said, even a dead dog can swim with the tide. That's not what Paul's saying. He's not loose on what he believes and thinks in order to win people. So what does he mean by all things to all people? Well, here's what I think he means. You can go home after this if you like. Here's the big idea. It's self-denial. Self-denial so that others might be won for Christ. Self-denial so that others might be won for Christ. Look down at verse 19. Though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. So Paul is as tight and as narrow and as unflinching as the gospel demands him to be, but as flexible and as adaptable as the gospel allows him to be. So when it comes to Jewish culture, he says, verse 20, I live like a Jew, so that they might hear and understand the truth about Jesus. When it comes to doing Gentile, I live like a Gentile, so that although they'd understand and hear the message about Jesus. When it comes to the weak in society, I live like the weak. And I think the weak there is not the Christian conscience week of chapter 8, but the weak in Corinthian society being those without power and influence and significance, those on the margins of society. Paul says, I'd become like them so that they might hear and understand the gospel. He wants to see people move from death to life, to have their sins forgiven, to sins taken away, and for Jesus Christ to have given them his righteousness. That's what he's desperate for. And so he's radically flexible, adaptable to the different cultures that he wants to preach the gospel in. It's amazing, really, when you think about it. Elsewhere in the Bible, and part of the book that Ben quoted at the start of our service, we hear Paul say that he's a Hebrew of Hebrews, born into a Hebrew family. When it came to being Jewish, like, he knew how to do Jewish. And so before becoming a Christian, there was nothing more fundamental to Paul's identity than his cultural heritage as a Jew. And yet, astonishingly, he says here that he denies his cultural identity in order that non-Jewish people might get to hear the gospel. He puts it to one side that they might be saved. I don't think it would have been easy for Paul to do Gentile, would it? If you know much about that conflict between Jew and Gentile, can't have been easy for him to say no to his Jewishness in order to reach the Gentiles. Or in our own day, just ask anyone, ask Joe later if you like, that's moved to another culture in order to teach people about Jesus. And basically, life must be full of self-denial to engage with another culture. And perhaps some of you will be called to do that, to move to another culture in order to win them for Christ, to get on a plane and go somewhere else. But this is not Paul's advice to missionaries going overseas. This is Paul talking to the Corinthians about them in their situation, and Paul defending his ministry to them. This is what cross-cultured people should look like. Self-denial so that others might hear and respond to the good news about Jesus. It's pretty challenging when you start to press it into the different aspects of church life. One that, as elders on Monday, we were reflecting on as part of our wider church family, including Big Beast and Up the Road, is our ministry to international students. There is loads to be thankful for when it comes to welcoming international students in our church. Loads to be thankful for. Lots of people doing lots of good to help the international students that come into our church building. But John Goodwin, who's one of the ministers at Beast and Free as well, said this. His observation was that international students or families that join Beast and Free often feel really welcome initially, but find it almost impossible to integrate into deeper relationships in the church family. Particularly international families feel on the edge of church life. Their kids don't get invited to the birthday parties. They're not part of the friendship groups in our church family. Sort of always on the edge. They don't seem to serve in the same way that others do. It's worth some self-reflection as a church family. Like, why would that be? Could it be that we're willing to flex to a point to welcome, but you're not coming in our home? I don't know. It's an interesting one to puzzle over. Or think about here in the Rylands, in our particular context in Beeston. What would cultural self-denial for the sake of others mean in the Rylands? What would that look like? Now, my place that I tend to meet people is on the school patio at pickup, meet people in the community and the rugby club. But just from the patio this week, I've tried to keep a check of the different cultures that I think exist on the patio. There are the people like me, the, you know, educated, been to university, professional types. Then there's the large Eastern European community who greet each other. As you watch them walk down the patio, they all know who each other are. There's the white working class. But then there's other communities in the Rylands as well, aren't there? There's those that are, you know, in the caravans down by the marina. There's the elderly who are living in the nursing homes. There's the long-standing Rylanders who run the cat meetings and the youth group. There's probably an LGBTQ community somewhere in the Rylands. There's the guys that play darts in the Jolly Angler most nights. What would it mean for us to reach those different communities? What kind of self-denial? Cultural self-denial. This is not just what kind of events could we put on that might make them come in, but to live amongst them. What kind of houses might we need to buy? What kind of aspirations for our children might we need to forego? I don't know, it's cultural identity. What do we need to self-deny to win people, to get a hearing for the message about Jesus? A few years ago, Owen Jenkins was a teenager in the Rylands, and really tragically, he was an accident down at the river, and he died. And in lots of ways, it was great how people in this church family were able to speak into that situation in lots of different ways, whether that's through the rugby club or through helping out in different ways at different things. So there's lots of good there, lots of connections. But what was fascinating a few years sort of looking back and thinking about it with this chapter in mind was the wake that happened at the Boat and Horses, the afternoon of his funeral. A number of us went to that. And I think it's fair to say that you could spot Rylands Community Church people at that wake. If it wasn't such a tragic situation, it would have been quite funny. I can talk to you about that later. It was just obvious that we weren't part of the working, white working class community of the Rylands. What we wore, what we drank, how we sort of behaved, we were on the edge. And we're still on the edge. And Paul says, I self-deny my cultural rights in order to get alongside people that are completely different to me, people whose cultural identity I don't particularly like, in order that I might win them for Jesus. Do you see, this challenge here is not just what events could we do to get people in? Or could we arrange the chairs slightly differently, or different coffee, or better biscuits, and maybe people will come to church? No one's coming to church for the biscuits. It's good to think about that. It's good to think about that. But the question is more profound here. It's how do my priorities, my aspirations in life, my social expectations need to flex and bend and adapt in order to get a hearing for Jesus? How do I become a slave to another culture, Paul says, in order that that culture might hear about Jesus? It's challenging, isn't it? Sometimes it will mean going against the grain of a particular culture. We saw that last week. This is not just become like people. Sometimes we've got to live differently. Indeed, we looked at 1 Peter a year or so ago and saw that we're to live as aliens and strangers, as like refugees in society, as outsiders, because we belong to another kingdom. So it's not become like them in every way. But it's certainly different to what we're doing. One thing to puzzle over, another application of this, a few conversations I've had with people over the last few weeks, is to do with Pride Month. It's been all over the news, hasn't it? Rainbow flags and all over it everywhere. And I think the temptation for Christians during Pride Month is to stick our head in the sand and wait for it to pass over so that we don't have to engage with it. Because we're all pretty afraid of what people might think of us. But in Pride Month, how should we remain faithful to the Jesus' words about marriage and human sexuality while helping people in the LGBTQ community see that the gospel isn't just for heterosexual people? Maybe something to question for your home groups. Here's a question someone asked me last Sunday at Big Beeston. Should we wear the rainbow flag badge in the office? What do you think? Yes or no? Don't know. Puzzle over it. I think there's good arguments both ways. See, I think Paul's just saying, look, we've made the Great Commission. The challenge for us is we've made the Great Commission. All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me, Jesus says. So therefore, do what you can to get people into your culture. It's not the Great Commission, is it? Jesus says, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go. Go and make disciples. Self-denial for the sake of others. Now, if some of you here are thinking that God might be calling you overseas, let me encourage you to keep processing that and praying that through. That'd be wonderful. But if that is where you think God might be leading you, or it's been placed on your heart to do some point, the question this passage asks you is, how are you self-denying now for the sake of people in the Rylands? Because if you're not willing to do it here now, there's no way getting on a plane will help you do it. See, Paul's saying, I look like I do. My ministry, look to you, looks like it does, because the cross-shaped life is a radically flexible life for the sake of others hearing and understanding the message about Jesus. Radical flexibility. Secondly, the cross-shaped life is like a race where we run to win. Look down at verse 24. Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Paul gives a culturally relevant illustration to the Corinthians. Every 2 to 3 years in Corinth was hosted something called the Isthmian Games, second in importance only to the Olympic Games. It was a big deal. And so Paul uses, and there's some evidence actually that when Paul was in Corinth, when Paul was writing this letter, that these games may have just happened or been happening. Some historians have tried to puzzle that together. In other words, Paul's saying, like, look at the athletes, look at the wrestlers and the boxers at the games, running and competing in a way to win the prize. And they go into strict training. They're always exercising consistent self-denial in order that they may be able to run to win the prize. That's why they discipline their bodies in the way that they do. And the emphasis here is not so much on the winning, but on the nature of the running. Do you notice that in verse 24? Run in such a way as to get the prize. And the point here is not run in order to earn salvation. That's not what this chapter's about. The chapter's about winning others for Jesus. So the prize here is the salvation of others. It's not running for my salvation, but that others might receive salvation. That's the goal. That's the prize. That's the imperishable crown that everything in Paul's life is shaped around. He runs for the salvation of others. He chooses to lay aside all the things that he's free to do in order to discipline himself so that he might run for the sake of others, that some might be saved. See, Paul's got in mind the final day. We're going to see it when we get to chapter 15, the glorious new creation, the imperishable future that's ours in Jesus. On the final day, when death swallowed up in victory, that day is coming to Paul's mind. And Paul says, on that day when Jesus comes in his glory and I'm stood before the throne and I'm singing the praises of Jesus in the new heavens and the new earth, I'm singing it with the Jewish Corinthians around me and the Gentile Corinthians around me and the weak Corinthians around me. That's my prize. That's what I'm running for. That's why I run like I do. I'm running for that prize, for that day. Now, it's an obvious question now for us, is it? Is that the race you're in, Christian? Is that the race you're in? Is that the race you're competing in? Living in such a way so that people might have opportunity to hear and respond to the good news about Jesus. Or picture your colleagues, your kids, your neighbours. Think of the folks in the static caravans, the people on the patio. Like, just get those people in your minds, and then imagine that on the day of the new creation, that first morning, those people are stood around you, singing praises to Jesus. Don't you want that? Paul says, run like you want it then. Compete like that's your ambition. Embrace self-denial so that others might hear and respond to the gospel. Self-denial for the sake of others. So it's worth asking, isn't it, this morning, what changes do you need to make to how to help others hear and respond to the good news about Jesus? What cultural self-denial needs to happen? Famously, David Brailsford coached the Olympic cycling team, and he said that if you want to make 100% improvement on your performance, then change 100 things by 1%. Don't go for the big thing. Find lots of little things and make a change. I think that's quite helpful for us to think in that those ways, rather than, right, like, I'm going to go and sell my house and buy a caravan. Like, that's not, I think the application might be, but it's not, I don't think that's the, then we, right. Anyway, I don't think that's the big application. But why don't we pray that God would show up 100 things in your marriage, in your lifestyle, in how you spend your money and how you use your time, that you could say, Lord, would you help me to see how these things could be denied for the sake of others? Maybe you could start with meal times. 21 times a week, everyone eats. Could those be times where they're more intentional to an outsider? So instead of sitting on your own at work, you go and sit with someone else. Dead easy. Or maybe not, I don't know. Could you think about where you go for a drink with your mates? I know the Vic is really nice, but there are two other pubs you have to walk past to get there. And I don't just mean go and have a drink and sit in a corner in a holy huddle and think that that's evangelism. No, go and play darts. Go and stand around the pool table with the other locals. I know that will be uncomfortable. I know that for some of you that will be the last thing you want to do, but so what? For the sake that they might hear the gospel, could you go and play pool? Maybe it's taking the plunge with a neighbour and instead of the over-the-fence, how you doing kind of conversations, but trying to push a bit deeper. See, the message of Jesus Christ and him crucified is of such staggering significance that Paul is he's fiercely intentional, isn't he? His life is a race running for the sake of others. That they might be with him on the last day. Paul's life is a cross-shaped life. And it's like that because that was Jesus, the shape of Jesus' life. And that's the final point, more briefly. Cross-shaped living. There's a prize we're to run for, which Paul uses to motivate us here. That final day gathered. But there's another motivation in this passage, and it's slightly hard to see in our English translations. It's there negatively in verse 27. Look down at verse 27. No, I strike a blow to my body and make it my slave, so that after I've preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize. And we tend to read that and think, oh, Paul's talking, is he talking about his own salvation? That like he goes into a case of physical self-harm in order to make sure he's standing with Jesus at the end. Well, no, it's not that. Because this is not about his salvation. It's about the salvation of others. The prize is the salvation of others. Paul's saying, verse 27 is verse 19 all over again, I think. He disciplines himself. Pummels his body This self-denial life is not easy. It won't come naturally. It requires discipline and thought. But it's there more positively, I think, in verse 23. Sentence 23, look down at that. I do all this for the sake of the gospel that I might share in its blessings. Literally, verse 23 reads, I do it all for the sake of the gospel and that I might participate in it. And that slightly changes what we think verse 23 means. Paul says, I live the way I do for the sake of the gospel that I might participate in the gospel. And what does it mean to participate in the gospel? Well, for Paul, to participate in the gospel means to live it out. To live out the like Jesus, to have a cross-shaped life. The gospel message about Jesus, he was born like us. Well, he was born in a stable, not a hospital, but, you know, he became a baby like us. He entered our humanity. He grew up just like us. He had a stepfather like some of you here. He sought asylum in a country that was not his own when his family fled to Egypt, far from all his family like many have had to do. He was abandoned by those who he loved the most. And as he died upon the cross, though he had no sin and no shame in and of himself, he felt the searing burden of shame just like us as he took onto himself all of our shame. The Eternal One experienced death just like us as he breathed his final breath and was buried just like us. But not just to be like us. He did all of that for us. Living the life we should have lived and dying the death we deserve to die, all for us. All because of all that, Jesus could say to the humans, I became human to win the humans. That's the gospel. The gospel in its core is the message about Jesus who said, to the humans, I became human to win the humans. Paul says, that's the life I live. That's the cross-shaped race that I'm in. Using the resources I have, and the person I am, and sometimes even denying those things so that others might find salvation. To the Jews, I become like a Jew. To the Gentiles, I become like a Gentile. To the weak, I became weak. To the Rylanders, I become like a Rylander. Let's pray.